And I'm Reggie.
And this
is our NBA talk.
Oh my God.
Sorry.
I have to sing it, man.
No, you don't.
I do.
It's just
either that or we hire a singer. You know any good R&B singers?
Yeah, I know a lot of R&B singers.
I mean, like, that will show up and sing our intro.
No.
Okay. Well, see, then you don't really have what I need, man.
We're not associated with the music genre of R&B, Brian.
Says
only
you.
Significance
says,
is,
says you.
Is the letter.
Says you.
This is far from rhythm and blues, bro.
Every time I go home, I sing Al Green all the way home.
Okay. Well,
not well.
That's good. We'll make sure we record that at some point.
Not,
we'll just that's gonna
well.
Be an episode.
I don't do Al
Brian
Green justice.
Sings R&B coming at you.
No, we're gonna pass on that. We wanna gain viewers. We don't wanna lose viewers.
That's true.
You know. So, Reggie.
No. I'm done with this. How's your week nonsense?
So you didn't have a good week? Is what you're saying? All right. No. Let's move on, shall we?
Here's what I want to ask today, dude.
Okay.
Not how was your week, but besides our topic for the day, what has been on your mind this week?
Ooh. Communication has been on my mind this week.
A worthy subject matter.
Communication has been heavy.
And in what manner?
Heavily draped upon me in several manners.
Okay.
As I am currently attempting to change my personal dynamic within my home a little bit to be a little more thought leading before I speak, right? I don't tend to like just shoot stuff out of my rear, but there are times that I need to stop and think for a little bit, but also communication in leadership has been a big thing on my mind as of late. Like, you know, I realized something the other day that being a good leader is not helping others. It's asking for help.
Yeah.
And trying to, you know, rearrange dynamics and listening to people conversate and talk and trying to understand other people's dynamics. And, you know, our conversation Tuesday night was I walked away from that conversation with a lot of insights. You know, one of the things that's been, you know, something I'm trying to reconstruct is how I respond. You know what I mean?
Which is critical.
Not necessarily what I say, but the manner with which I say it.
Okay. I've dealt with this quite a bit. Because mm-hmm. generally speaking, if you don't know me personally, if what and whatever I say can come off as two things, either condescending, it can come off as arrogant,
gruff.
Abrupt.
Gruff.
Gruff is a good term. But I guess I'm at the point where I don't, not that I don't care, mm-hmm. but I'm less affected by someone interpreting it poorly. Unless I really had an intent of something of a tone that it did not get through. Right. Mm-hmm. Because I've been in leadership now in corporate America for a while. And you, it's very difficult sometimes to communicate you. And especially in where I'm at, where I have to go across the globe, like I communicate to all these different cultures and geographical stuff where, there is certain things that you just, it's not going to be the same. It's not going to be totally the same. And people, the last time I took this stupid managing class, all these people were like, oh, people are pretty much the same across the globe. Well, yeah, but they don't have the same culture, and the same things you say from one thing to another will be interpreted differently, or the order of which you say some things. For instance, in Japan, if you don't show respect and honor to the person that you're talking to, forget it. There's nothing you will say. You will just be a the white guy or American gringo, whatever you want to call it, that is the guy gene. That's it. That's all you'll ever be, right?
Well, one thing I've noticed, and I've always kind of noticed this dynamic, but especially as of late, is there are leaders and authorities. Now, that's two different things, right? Like, I've known people who are CEOs, presidents of companies,
yeah,
that are authorities. So you do what they say because they have authority over you, but you wouldn't follow them, right? And I've known people who are at the lowest level of the company who are leaders because they look to not only set the example, but they look to help the people to the right and the left. Right.
Well, so, yeah, I mean, I don't think I would quantify it as there's a difference between authority and leadership. I think it's intertwined when you do it well. Okay.
That is true.
Right. I would definitely agree with that in my own position. I'm fortunate that I was established as a go-to SME guy for the company before I ever became in management.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really have to work to like come in someplace new and establish myself as a thought leader or a subject matter expert or so that I didn't know what I was doing. It was actually just, I already had my cred built up from technical stuff. Mm-hmm. People just didn't know if I was going to be an appropriate leader or not for the group. And it turns out that it wasn't hard to transition that. Now I had other leadership stuff that I'd done early on in my life through churches and different organizations, whatever. So it's not like I didn't have any leadership experience anyway, But we're called, let me say that leadership is a calling. It's a biblical calling. I mean, there's titles for it, like pastor and elder, but there's also too, I think you don't.
It's a masculine calling.
Well, it is a very much masculine calling. But what I'm saying is it's not just masters or pastors or elders who are called to be leaders. Like you, just because you're not a pastor, doesn't mean your calling isn't leadership. Okay. Yeah. Just to point that out, right? I mean, it's still, you can still have a biblical calling of leadership and not be a pastor or an elder.
And, okay, anyway. And not to, you know, it is a masculine, now not to say that the women can't be leaders, but it's a very masculine calling in a very specific sense. As in we are, as men of God, called to lead. We don't always do a good job at it, but we are, right?
We're called to lead
our families. We're called to...
Yeah.
You know, we're called to lead our communities. We're called to be leaders in a lot of different ways.
We spoke about that.
Yeah.
And kind of what our viewpoints of the biblical man. I actually repeated this just recently every once in a while I stick my nose out there and say something on social media and I end up having to have a debate or long lengthy explanations or whatever. And it just never surprises me at what you end up getting into.
For sure.
I'll say it. There was a meme someone threw out there, and I don't even remember where I found it from. It was on Facebook. One of my friends posted this a picture of Jimmy Carter talking about how Jesus didn't ever talk directly to homosexuality, it was something like that. Okay.
Yeah.
It was totally ridiculous.
Yeah.
And okay, so here's the thing about this. Let me, I think this is part of, this is going into part of our conversation, but like, I do not tolerate misinterpretation of scripture to fit somebody's idea of a lifestyle or a choice. And you can, I don't care if you say born with this or that. No, it's still a choice whether to follow that urge or desire or whatever it is. Okay. So let's just stop that gap right there. But here's what the thing is. I'm not called, or we're not called, to tell people how to live.
No, not at all.
Okay, that's the thing that I think, and I think this is where a clouded perspective comes from the LGBT militant agenda, because they are so hell-bent on everyone agreeing and praising them for their lifestyle that they refuse to just acknowledge that there's a possibility that – you know,
the tolerant left.
Yeah, the tolerant left, the intolerant tolerant left.
Yeah.
So here's the deal. Like, as a Christian, no, I do not think a homosexual LGBT relationship is holy. I think it's sinful. I don't hold it, though, any different from like a pastor having an affair or looking at porn or any number of lustful or sexual desires. Let's be super
clear, too. Sin is sin, right? Like, that's sin is sin. There are no levels of sin. You're not like, well, you're going to get level 5 sin on this one. So gluttony is a sin.
But there's an argument for that, though. Okay, the Bible does, the only sin it calls an abomination is sexual immorality. Now, there's a reason for that. The way sexual immorality affects you is very internal and it's soul-crushingly deep. In other words, and here's why I'll say psychology kind of makes this clear. The way a man's brain is wired, if you look at porn, you rewire your brain, not chemistry, but neutrons or whatever it is. You actually rewrite your thought patterns in your brain because you're so wired for that. By looking at that stuff, being flooded with that kind of material, you actually change how your brain thinks about stuff. Like it has all these negative repercussions for that, right? It's very much an internal change of that. Like other things like stealing and murder and even idolatry is outward. But the internal change for the sexual immorality is just different. Now, it doesn't mean severity of it is not changed. Let me make that clear. It's not a severity thing. But it's a difference of the way you're disconnected from God. Because keep in mind, that's the whole thing sin does, is separates you from the creator of the universe. So that's what the internal sexual immorality type of sin does different than other sins.
I don't know. I would argue that sins like, for a great example, would be a sin like idolatry. Like sometimes we can be that idol.
Well, addiction isn't like an idolatry.
Yeah.
Right. It does change you, but I'm just saying.
Well, it's addiction different. Does change you.
It does.
On a, some addictions can change you on a genetic level. Right. So can affect the very, you know, cells of your body. So do I think that that it's definitely impactful? For sure. But I would argue that things like I are one of the things that I've really, and I'm running into it right now. God forsaken election cycle. Is this internal idolatry? This idea coming from the left that we need this internal idolatry of our body. Our bodies are more important than what we are built to do. So abortion's okay, right? Because I idolize my body and I idolize control of my body and I idolize this power that I have to control my destiny, and I'll murder to keep it.
Yeah. I am staunchly pro-life, and I mean abolitionist level pro-life. Like, I believe at the moment of conception, that is now a human being. Mm-hmm. I believe if logically and scientifically, if you try to classify that any different, then you're allowing for a logical slippery slope argument for developmental age, size, shape of definitions of a human that could definitely be applied in later stages of life. So for me, if you've classified as that DNA structure is now human, that is a human. There's no and or bits, buts about it. That now has a intrinsic right to live.
Well, I go back to what I spoke about on this before. When you create a life, that particular life, that DNA, those cells are unique in their existence. There will never be another one exactly like it.
No.
Not only is it a combination of you and the person that you enacted to build that with, but it's going to have its own life experiences. It's got its own plot, its own path. And when you kill that, you kill a unique being.
Yeah.
And to me, that's the biggest tragedy of it is, how can you possibly define yourself as compassionate when you choose to strip life away from something before it has an opportunity to take its unique path going down that road?
And look, And I mean, I don't want to hear the argument about like, what about if this or that? Again, I'm not going to speak about incestuous stuff or rape victim stuff, because they'll speak for themselves, and they have.
Yeah.
And it's not up to me, but they've said that it actually turned out to be a blessing to have this child or whatever. I don't know. I it's not up to me. I would let that let them decide that. However, that's just such a super small percentage.
Yeah, that's if I'm correct, that's like about less than 1%.
Yeah, strip that away for a minute, because we're talking about 98% of probably of the other stuff.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about those.
Here's my thing. What are we teaching people when we say, especially people who just go out and have promiscuous sex and get pregnant, and they're like, well, I'll just kill it. What are we teaching them about consequence? Right. What are we teaching them about responsibility? What are we teaching them about,
we're not.
We're literally just being like, well, just kill it.
Because you are saying, because of the development, because of the size, because of the age, because of the shape, because of this, you can eradicate that being.
Well, and it's a mute argument anyway.
It is.
I mean, they're still beating the drum about this whole Roe versus Wade thing. There are no less abortions now per capita than there was before Roe versus Wade was reversed. So whatever this argument is that you're having about abortion rights and all these things that are going on, guess what? It's empty. It doesn't have any merit. It's an argument of position and position only.
They do not tolerate the freedom for a state to make that choice themselves, to legislate that.
And let me be clear, just like I think the state should decide on things like the legalization of marijuana.
Yeah.
Just like I think the state should decide on certain levels of criminality and how they should be punished. I think the state should decide, if you have a state that's 90% conservative and 10%, sorry, you can always move to a state that has a heavier liberal side if you want. Here's the thing about, this is something else that bothers me too, and we're going to get into this. This is part of that thought I had the other night when I was leaving, and I'm going to go ahead and break the bubble. Tonight we're talking about tolerance.
Yep.
And you and I were talking about people misunderstanding what tolerance is.
Correct.
Well, I think the birth of what I'm about to say was in the word I just used, misunderstanding. I think that people don't realize that there's a difference between tolerance and understanding. And let me explain what I mean when I say that.
Okay. I'm ready.
Understanding. Okay. I understand that there are things that go on in the world that I don't want to go on. I'm clear on those things. I don't have a misconception on, murder and child abuse and all those things. But I don't have a tolerance for it. And I think that's what people are crossing over. They think that that understanding something means being tolerant of it. No. I understand clearly what my Bible says, and I tolerate what the Bible says because it is woven into my life. I also understand that there are people out there that hate Christians, but I won't tolerate you. I will understand you, and I will give you your space as an American to say what you need to say, because the freedom of speech is paramount only when you're hearing something that you don't want to hear. Because if you're hearing what you want to hear, that's not freedom of speech. That's just somebody you know.
Yeah, you're not
petting you on your soft spot.
It's not dealing with things that you agree with.
Yeah.
Tolerance and toleration has to do with a difference of perspective, opinion, action, whatever.
But understanding
it's a difference. Is not the same.
Does not mean tolerance.
Right, correct.
You and I have a clear understanding of what the world is.
Yes.
We have a clear understanding of what politics is. We have a clear understanding of all these things that are going on. But our choice to tolerate or not tolerate something has nothing to do with whether we understand it or not.
Yeah, like and going back to the pro-life, pro-choice movement thing.
Yeah.
I have no tolerance for anything other than it's a human life at conception. I don't have, because I can't think of a scientific, biological, genetic, any kind of thing that tells me that it's not a human at when the point of their DNA is complete.
Yeah.
So I have no tolerance for the arguments that have a counter to that. On the other hand, I have a tolerance for the legalization or not even having it be legislated at all for types of marriage, where I think and I believe that marriage is defined biblically. It's a spiritual thing between a one man and one woman. Whether or not I think that should, I don't even think that should be a legislated thing at all, actually. I don't think we need to have tax structures and all this stuff around marriage and define it.
But I have a little bit different outlook on it than most people. And my outlook is this: just because the federal government or the state government says something's legal doesn't mean I have to participate.
Well, that's true. And I mean, that's right. We can't be, in other words, forced speech, which is what we'll refer back to, like the Jordan Peterson stuff that he's got lost his license and all this stuff just because he refused to, you know, be forced to say certain words. Same thing. Like, you're not going to force me to believe anything.
Yeah.
That's you are being intolerant of my beliefs.
Yeah.
Which is totally not see the left wing stuff. Here's what really pisses me off about all of this stuff. They go on and on and on about how they tolerate all this, but they don't. It's absolutely nothing. It's their way or the highway. Period. You hear Kamala talking about her holler. Dude, she is completely now like pro-abortion all the way. I mean, like, you might as well kill a toddler from what the way she's talking. Yeah. It's crazy. No, absolutely not. But tolerance. There's a need to be tolerant of things you disagree with. Yeah. But everyone should have principles and just things that they hold fast to that they don't have, they will not tolerate. Like it should be a cultural or societal thing for, and have a mass agreement about what we tolerate, what we don't. You know, we don't tolerate child abuse.
Yeah.
We don't tolerate
pedophilia.
Yeah. I mean, like even though I don't care how do you define that? Absolutely not. I will not. Mm-mm, not tolerating it.
Well, and it goes back to, and you know, people all the time make this argument. I'll go back to, you know, and this is one of those the situations where, and look, this is not a judgment thing that I'm saying, but it's this whole argument. Well, I'm gay from birth. Okay. All right. Well, what about the guy in prison that was a pedophile from birth? Because that's what he's claiming, right? I can't prove it, but he's claiming it. So, or what about the guy that's a murderer? Says, oh, well, I've wanted to murder since I was a kid. It's just my DNA. That's how it is. The problem you have when you get into this, we must tolerate everything kind of argument, is that you open very scary doors, right? You allow, because the argument has to perpetuate, right? Like you can't just say, well, there's just a transgender gene, or there's just a gay gene, because you open that door for a whole lot of other
abhorrent
things to go on that are all of a sudden, well, now you're in deep. Well, I said these are real. I don't really have any proof that they're real. but now I don't want to be intolerant of this guy who's telling me, you know, he was born a pedophile, so maybe he's right too. Or I don't, or this woman told me that she was a born murderer. I can't hold that against her. That's who she is.
Yes.
It's a very scary, just dark black hole that we open up.
For instance,
you know,
psychopathy. You can be born and as a psychopath.
Yeah.
Your whole life can be led as a psychopath.
Yep.
Now, you can learn to understand that and live with that.
Yep.
But you don't go necessarily learn that it's not, it's very hard for those kind of people to not be narcissistic and everything. I mean, because it's, there's no emotion.
Because that's part of psychopathy.
Yeah. That's what I mean. So, like, just a, you know, so, but you wouldn't tolerate a psychopath going off on a rampage.
No.
Well, they were born like that. It doesn't matter.
Well,
an addict. Some people are born more attuned to be an addict or others.
I'm gonna probably get a lot of hate for what I'm about to say. And I don't say this because I don't believe that alcoholism and drug addiction is a genetic disease. And here's why I say that.
I didn't say that, by the way.
But I'm going kind of down that road you're going, where nobody ever fills a needle up with cancer and injects it on purpose. There's a point where you have to choose to take that drink. Now, am I saying that that doesn't become a disease of addiction as it grows? Absolutely, it does. It's been proven that alcohol can change you, your genetic. It can make genetic modifications stronger than cancer and all the other major diseases out there for certain people. So yes, there is a point in your journey with drugs and alcohol that you become addicted and the addiction becomes the disease.
But it's still a choice.
But it's still a choice. But, okay. Nobody chooses to have MS, right?
Yeah. So, well, I know, but like...
That's why I struggle with that part of addiction. I don't struggle with the fact that addiction is a disease and there are addicts out there. What I struggle with is when people go, well, they couldn't help it. No, you made a choice. Well,
yeah, I agree. And but the point being is that everybody's born with some kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
No one's born with a perfect like genetic code where they have no inclinations to things that are wrong. Like, I'm a guy. I was born very much a guy, and I have a strong lustful tendency. That does not mean, but genetically, that I'm allowed to go just have sex with whatever woman I want to. That's not okay. It's not okay to fulfill my innate internal lustful desires however and whenever I want. That is not okay. That's what I mean. Like, I love freaking junk food and all that stuff. Well, it's my choice. It's not, you could say I'm genetically wired to more like this stuff by how I was raised and what we grew up on and blah, blah, blah.
We can still choose.
It's not still a choice to follow those things. And besides all that, there are so many thousands and thousands and thousands of people who have stories of overcoming things when they became they found Christ and became and followers of him, and there's all kinds of addictions and lifestyles and everything else that are overcome by this. Now, that would not exist if there wasn't a way out from those choices.
Yeah.
There's even a, I forgot his name, Albert something. He wrote a book and did some speaking theories about, does God hate gay people? Is what, and it's fantastic because he actually says, I struggle with same sex attraction. But he writes a whole, he's an expert on it, dude. He goes through the whole thing about how blah, blah, blah. And I mean, but at the end of the day, again, it's not up to me. And this goes back to your communication thing too. I don't necessarily I guess I tolerate their lifestyle to the point where I don't feel like they need to be criminalized or anything like that. Right. Yeah. But, and I don't think it's, and I tolerate it enough to where I don't feel like it's my job to tell them and force them how to live. What I don't tolerate is when somebody takes the word of God, twists it to try to make that whatever it is. It's not just LGBT stuff. It's whatever it is.
Yeah.
And make that sound like it's biblically okay. That I will not tolerate, right? So how I communicate that is different from a place of superiority or whatever, because it's not. It's just like, hey, if you really want to know what the Bible says about this, I'm all about it. That doesn't mean I'm going to hate you or like, I'm not going to condemn you. That's not it. I'll just explain to you exactly how Jesus approached it, how the Old Testament approached it, how they're both connected. And if that helps you out towards your goal of learning about Christ and getting closer to him, then that's what it's supposed to do.
Yeah, that's it. Like, but there's no hate in me for anybody.
No. I mean, like, I don't care. Like, you are not affecting me. I mean, we went through about the affection stuff, but
yeah.
You are not affecting me directly enough with whatever you do in your privacy of your home that I'm going to sit there and be like, no, you have to stop that. And for me to like do something about it. No, it's done. You know, it's not bothering me. It's not done to do that. I'm tolerating that. Right.
Well, I mean, it's just very much for me. Tolerance is this. First of all, let's start with this. I want to read to you, the definition. I want to read you a couple of definitions of the word tolerance. Let's start with the dictionary, Oxford Language Dictionary of the word tolerance.
What year of dictionary though?
This is actually the
current one. Okay.
The ability or willingness to tolerate something, in particular, the existence of opinions or behaviors that one does not necessarily agree with. For example, the tolerance of corruption, the tolerance of religion is listed uniquely. The capacity to endure continued subjection to something, especially a drug, a transplant, an antigen, an environmental condition, or an adverse reaction. That's the current definition of tolerance in our Oxford Dictionary, the most current version. Now, let's go to what is the political theory of toleration. This one's very interesting. This is from LEPT.com. You can go there. They do a lot. They talk a lot about tolerance. It's actually just it's like a website all about tolerance. It's like, it just talks about religious tolerance, all the things. It says the idea of political toleration begins from the claim that the diverse individuals will come to tolerate one another by developing what roles called overlapping consensus. Individuals and groups with diverse metaphysical views or comprehensive schemes will find reasons to agree about certain principles of justice, which means essentially what our government should be doing. Right?
Yeah.
I don't like your view, you don't like mine, but we have to reach a consensus of agreement that is in the best interest of everyone, right?
Yeah, we're demonstrating our tolerance by meeting in the middle.
Yeah.
But I don't like that at all.
I don't either. But if our government worked that way, it'd be a lot better. Anyway, now the Bible defines tolerance as having sympathy or indulgence for beliefs or practices that differ from one's own. It involves accepting others even when you disagree with them and loving them in the name and love and respect. And in the name of love, in the name of God and love, and in respect for humanity, which God created. That is a biblical definition of tolerance.
Okay.
So that being said, that's a perfect example of tolerance in the general sense for across the board, right? I mean, you look at from the Oxford to the political to the biblical, they're essentially saying the same things. I don't like what you're doing, but because of my calling from Christ to love you like a brother, I'm going to tolerate your behavior and still attempt to bring a vision of Christ and an example of Christ into your life. Doesn't mean I'm going to get my Bible out every time you walk up to me and hit you with it.
Yeah.
It just means, hey man, I'm here if you need me. I'm going to live an example, right? For you, you're going to live an example, and then we're going to I'm going to try to give you what you need in order to develop and grow, right? Like, that's my purpose. My purpose is not to come to your house and kick your door down and tell you all the horrible things you're doing and judge you and make you feel horrible. That's not what Christ would do, right? That's not at all what I'm supposed to do. But I am supposed to let you know what the truth is.
Right. The Dictionary of Apologetics and Philosophy of Religion says that tolerance is often confused with a relativistic refusal to criticize another view or make any substantive value judgments. Logically, tolerance is consistent with an attitude of strong disagreement and even disapproval. There are many views I may tolerate in the sense that I think people should be allowed to hold them, that I think are mistaken or harmful. Tolerance is also sometimes confused with respect, but the two attitudes are distinct.
Yes.
I may respect a committed political rebel, even though I do not tolerate his behavior.
Yeah.
I may tolerate people whom I do not respect at all.
An example would be Robert Kennedy. I respect Robert Kennedy for his stance on health. I agree with him on that, but I do not agree with him on a lot of his economic and social politics. I believe that he is wrong in those areas, but I still hold respect for and tolerate his beliefs. And there are certain things that he says that I do agree with.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But here's where this really all kind of crests, right? This is where discourse has gone wrong. I remember a time, you know, it's one of the few great memories I have of when I was a kid, was when my grandfather and his brother, and they had a cousin, would sit around the table. And my grandfather is a staunch Republican, very, very hard right. His brother is an old school Kennedy Democrat.
Yeah.
And the cousin is, I don't really think he had a view, but they could sit around that table and have a discussion for hours and talk about the things that they disagreed with. None of them had the same view, but still walk away, shake hands and love each other and respect each other and be ready to come back in a couple of weeks and have another discussion. Right. But and I know that it sounds a lot like we beat up on the left. It really does.
And they deserve it.
But but the blazing white hot example of intolerance right now is the left. Oh, we're not going to give you guys the ability to decide for yourselves. We want the federal government to take over and decide for us. Oh, you don't agree with my lifestyle? Then you're a bigot. No, I don't read the definition of the word bigot. And along with that goes this whole evacuation of the definition of words.
Oh yeah.
Like bigot. And just racist.
Beep. We don't need those.
Like we'll use them, but we're just going to use them wrong all the time. We're going to apply them in the worst possible scenarios and in all the wrong phrases. And listen to, you know, Harris. It was really funny because I was listening to a montage of her in her last six rallies, and she literally word for word said the same thing in every rally. And if you listen closely, never use the words properly.
Yeah. I mean, she won't,
you know,
again, it's on purpose to hide, the lies and everything else, the deception that she wants to do.
Yeah.
That's how you do that. You mask your true, you know, stance on things by saying all this BS, all this cryptic nonsense. How you do it.
I grew up in a middle-class family. My mother worked very hard.
Which, unfortunately, she did not grow up in a middle-class family, which is a bold-faced lie. She had two college professors. Her mother was on the forefront of cancer research. This is not a middle-class family. And she didn't even grow up in America. She grew up in Canada. Come on, bruh. Come on. And then you know, but here's the thing too. It's that willful ignorance. We talked about this the other night. I'll tolerate your lies because I willingly don't want to believe the truth.
This is okay, but politically speaking, I think it's just important to know, and the people that need to hear this won't accept it anyway.
Yeah.
But you know, it's not tolerance when you just flat out say you have to support this.
Yeah. It's not.
You have to lift me up and praise me for this. Well, that's not tolerating anything.
It's like, it's just like, you know, it's just like Gay Pride Month. If you want to be proud of your sexual orientation, okay. But I'm not going to celebrate it with you. And here's the trick. It isn't because I don't want to celebrate yours. I don't even celebrate mine. That's between me and my wife or me and whoever my partner is. I don't need you to come to my house and hold me up and laud me and tell me that my sexuality is this great beacon of who I... No, that's very private for me and for my wife. And those things, right? Like this is how disastrous this has become, yeah. Right?
Well, it's exactly.
Just, it's become this fireball of a train wreck that, you know, you can't even watch anymore because it's just too much. Like, you know, when I go out into the world now, I find myself avoiding certain things and avoiding certain places because I just don't. It's not that I don't want you to do something. I just don't want you to think I need to participate in it with you.
Yeah, I mean, look,
you know,
we have freedom of speech, freedom of religion for a reason. We have freedom of, we have all these freedoms.
Yeah.
On purpose. Like it's because we're supposed to be free to be our own person and have our own mind, to have our own thoughts and to do what we want to do, right? I mean, yeah. Without hurting people.
Well, and it's so in the outrage culture, right? Like, here's the thing. I'll say it. If you don't like what Reggie and I are saying, turn us off. Go do something else. If you don't like Jordan Peterson, don't listen to him. If you don't like Barack Obama, don't listen to him. If you don't like... Here's the thing.
Any number of things.
You have a choice as to what you allow in. So this... fake outrage culture where you are creating things to be outraged about. Well, I can't believe the intolerance of transgender people. First of all, let's talk about the fact that that's less than 1% of the actual population.
Okay, it was until lately, and that number, you know what, has though, Reggie, skyrocketed.
That's not, no, it's, and I don't think it's going to last. I think this is like, you know, I hate to say this, but I think this is the big, this is, I think it's a trend. Well, I could really be popular if I told people that I would. Yeah.
Well, I agree.
And now you're seeing people who transitioned over the last 5 years pouring out saying, shouldn't have done it. It was just a phase. Had bad advice. Had the wrong people around me. Got wrapped up in this culture that I didn't really know what it was about.
No.
And then by the time I figured it out, I was way too far in. Right?
Like, correct.
There's a trend happening right now. And this is something that I truly believe is going to happen. And people laugh when I say this. And I had this conversation the other day. There will be a righting of the ship. Now, it might not be for 3 years. It might not be for 5 years. But there will be a righting of the ship where all of this nonsense will be realized and known for exactly what it is. And then all of a sudden, you're going to have all these people who have committed into these lifestyles and committed into this outrage culture that are going to be standing there empty.
Because they've wrapped their identity around a cultural movement.
Yeah.
And not around anything substantial.
Yeah.
Again, we talked about identity. It's critical for us, for anybody to root your identity in things that are not superficial, yeah, or just not fads or whatever. And you can say, well, I've felt like this all my life. Okay.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it's right. It really, like, again, that does not equal right or wrong.
One of the funniest things I've seen, and this is just an example. There was it was something like Dr. Phil. It may not have been Dr. Phil. I don't know. But there was an actual psychologist on there, and he was talking with a guy who was transitioning to be a woman. And he goes, you know, so how long have you known? And he goes, well, since I was an infant, since I was a baby, I've known, since I was a toddler. And he goes, okay. He goes, so that's so clear for you. And he goes, yeah. And he goes, well, can I ask you some questions? And he began to ask him questions about when he was a toddler. And the guy was like, you have no recallable memory of any of these things. The first time your mother held you, the first time you spoke, the first time. He goes, you can't remember any of those things, but you can remember being a toddler, waddling around your house, not able to clearly speak yet, but understanding clearly that you were in the wrong body.
Yeah, even understanding what that even means.
He goes, this is the flaw, right, in the logic of this is, well, when I was in elementary school, I can't even remember elementary school. How are you going to tell me that you so vividly remember your third or fourth grade year? But I bet you if I asked you to tell me what you had to eat for dinner every day this week, you couldn't tell me.
Yeah.
So there's this, it's just so dramatic and so overspoken. And so, hey, just say you don't want to be a guy right now. That's all you got to say. That's just as valid, right?
I mean, to me, it's delusional, and I still think it's a mental disease.
Well, I mean, body dysmorphia is in the D.
Yeah, I mean, but psychological research and practices have been taken over by the political agenda.
Yeah.
But I digress. Okay.
Anyway, sorry.
So the one thing I want to touch on here. There was an article I found called The Failure of Tolerance at Stanford. Mm-hmm. Okay. So basically what happened is Stanford designed its curriculum and its faculty and its policies around this whole theme of political correctness. Mm-hmm. Okay. It was disaster. Abysmal failure. Okay. There was two graduates who documented the failure pretty much. Black students were blacklisted by their peers because they befriended white students, and a male excluded from an all-female feminist studies class by the other students. What became apparent at Stanford was the degree to which multiculturalism issued in gross tolerance, even though it ostentatiously marched under the banner of tolerance. Issued in gross intolerance, even though it ostentatiously marched under the banner of tolerance.
Yep.
Right? So, I mean, it doesn't work. Now, here's what I'll say too. Okay. This is about the whole tolerance thing. And it kind of goes into all kinds of stuff with whether we talk about systematic racism and all this other nonsense. Like, we are, no one is like me and you. Okay. We are not equal. We're not equal.
No,
there's some things I vastly do or can do or whatever, different or better than you, yeah. Poorlier than you, whatever. You do things the same way, right?
Yep.
We are not equal.
Nor have I ever expected us to be equal.
No. And that's just, we're two Caucasian Christian males sitting in the midst of Western United States, and we're not equal, and we're supposed to be, right?
No, we're not.
No,
we are not supposed to be
so equal. So how can we sit there and do all this nonsense about equilibriums and equality and everything else when even when we're from kind of same stuff and blah, 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 we're not even equal. So it makes no sense whatsoever to extrapolate all this nonsense out and to try to say, we're going to be so tolerating of all this stuff. And then you end up just being intolerant. because it opens it up to all kinds. You can't. Then you can't say stuff that's on your mind. You're restricted. So then you're not tolerant at that point. Yeah. Anyway, that's it. I hate this. It's like, and the other thing too. Another great example of tolerance was here recently at the Kamala Harris rally, where somebody yells out, "Christ is King, Jesus is Lord." You're at the wrong rally. That's exactly what she said, right? Yeah. Cheers erupt.
Yeah.
You're not tolerating a religious belief at your rally.
Yeah.
Now, you could, I would say, why would you yell that out in the middle of a rally anyway? I mean, it's, I guess to it, you have to, you're doing that in order to elicit and some kind of reaction, obviously.
Probably, yeah.
Now, and they were ushered out of the rally.
Yeah.
Okay. That's fact. You can look it up. I'm not mistaking that at all. Right. So, and what's weird about this is that this is the first time a political party has actually made that kind of like blatant anti-Christian statement. Yeah. Up, you know, Clinton,
but
Obama.
I mean, honestly, Joe Biden, I mean, they went after Christian colleges for not allowing in non-Christian teachings and studies during the Biden administration. Like there's been a pretty outright and blatant agenda against Christians.
Oh, I understand that. I'm just saying like this is an outward spoken anti-Christian message at a political rally for president, right?
Yes.
That's, you know, there's been policies and stuff. I don't disagree with that. But like, but again, like Obama and like Clinton and Jimmy Carter, all these people have said they were Christian and they did this and they agreed to these principles and they blah, blah, blah. It's always been a thing. Because obviously there's a vast amount of Christians in the United States, so they're pandering to that anyway.
Yeah.
But this is the first time where we're actually seeing in a political race at a rally. So it's really a direct clear.
Rebuke of
yes.
the Christian faith. Yes.
The same thing happens at a J.D. Vance rally, and J.D. Vance is clear. He's like, yeah, he is. He doesn't go extrapolate on anything, but it's like it was no big deal.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, This is appalling. Now, this is why I say I do not understand. Maybe I tolerate it. I haven't really made up my mind about this, about like Christians who just refuse to see how anti-Christian the left is right now.
I think, again, going back to how I began this conversation.
In the veil?
Could be. I think there are a lot of Christians that are misunderstanding the difference between understanding and tolerance.
Exactly.
If you want to argue my beliefs with me, and I go back to, I've said this again before, I'm very blessed in the fact that I'll talk to anybody about what I believe. Doesn't matter. I'm not like you. I don't have an apologetics degree, but I will sit down and have a very open conversation. And I'm the first guy to be willing to listen to what you have to say, but you're going to have to listen to what I have to say. And what I'm finding is happening in our current church is this, well, we just have to understand that they're misled. Well, that statement alone should trigger within you the need to begin a process of communicating with that person and in connecting with that person and trying to become, you know, close to that person so that you can give them some balance in that and maybe get them to see and be tolerant. And it doesn't make any sense. Our job as Christians, you know, everybody wants to get into, we want to do the first and foremost, our job is the Great Commission. We are called to go and make fishers of men, period. It doesn't say make fishers of men and have a bake sale. It doesn't say make fishers of men and have Bible camp. It says that is the one thing, that is the one marching order we were given.
Yeah.
Right? But it's like we're afraid. It's like we're afraid. If we go out there, they won't like us.
They're not gonna like you,
and then they won't wanna. Well, then they'll be mean to us, and then they'll say,
yep.
"Dude, pardon me, but they were pretty mean to Christ when they beat him to near death and then stabbed him to a cross and left him there to die. I doubt you're in any danger of that because your neighbor don't like you. So how sturdy are you as a Christian if you're not willing to have that conversation? Like that tells me a lot about the strength of your actual belief. Is if you listen, the Pharisees are dead. We're not in Rome. And yeah, you might get yelled at, or they might call you intolerant, or they might call you a crazy person.
Any number of things.
But they ain't going to kill you.
But I think there's a lot of this. I've seen a lot of intellectual, I would say more progressive Christian thoughts about like the political idolatry of Christian nationalism.
Mm-hmm.
I've read some stuff about that here recently.
Christian nationalism.
I mean, I would say, yeah, if you look at politics as something that is this high woo and you bow down to it kind of stuff, then yeah, you're kind of it, but it's not the end all be all. For a Christian, especially, you should understand this. That's not it, but that doesn't mean you don't participate and have agency and who you vote for.
Here's what it was down to, Reggie. God forbid if Kamala Harris wins, we'll get another shot at it in 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Trump wins, God forbid, and all those people that don't like Trump, you'll get another shot at it in 4 years. If you are so inertly tied to the results of the presidency that you forget what you should be doing day to day, you've got a problem that you need to really deal with.
I think there is caution to be had when you talk about who does become president.
Well, yeah.
But thankfully, our government doesn't explicitly revolve around the presidency. It's not a tyrannical leadership. Well, it's not supposed to be, I should say. But, you know, we and here's the danger of it. There's lots of people. There's lots of very established and well-spoken like attorneys and stuff who are saying how there's already hundreds of attorneys in every state for the Kamala campaign that are already lobbying to do this and this. And they're already doing all kinds of things in order to thwart the election.
Yeah.
So we know the election is they're trying to corrupt it as much as they can.
Of course.
Right. So,
but we also know that on the conservative side, especially in early voting, we've had the largest turnout of early voting ever from conservatives.
All I'll say though is that it doesn't matter if okay. Politics is not the end all be all. The election cycle isn't the end all be all. It's not like God isn't sovereign. That doesn't change. So, I mean, at the end of the day, you're supposed to pray for your leaders, pray for the country, pray for your communities. This is what you're supposed to do as a Christ follower. Mm-hmm. And let, you know, what, how God's not, there's not like anything that happens that God doesn't just say, you know, oh, oops, I forgot that. That's not how, especially leaders of countries and stuff. Those are appointed and he does that.
Yeah.
For reasons. We don't know all the reasons for this, by the way, either. But, you know, there's no, I see a lot of doom and gloom and stuff. And okay, there's some, I'm not saying all of it is invalid or that there's no cause to be concerned about, you know, who becomes the president of the United States. Because, I mean, frankly, the biggest things right now to me in my mind are who's going to be the one to talk to the other world leaders who are nuclear powers.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I just can't, I think Kamala Harris is like the worst person in the world to go talk to some of these leaders. Right?
I think what you see of her right now is not the real her.
No, but I'm just saying, no.
I think what you're seeing now is
a caricature,
not even a caricature. I think you're seeing the reason she's struggling is because she is saying things that she knows are not true. And are not the things that she wants. But she's been given a script by the powers that be, and they have said, don't tell them what your true colors are, because if you do, you're probably going to lose votes.
Well, keep in mind that the string pullers of the Democratic Party very much don't want a lot of, there's a lot of things. And I really believe that Epstein list is like severely important because it probably like a lot of her donors are on there.
If you take Epstein and then you throw Diddy's list on top of it.
I mean, come on. But anyway, so getting back to this, I truly think that tolerance, and we both would say it's misunderstood at the moment. And there are some days where it's really hard to be tolerant of a lot of things. It makes you mad. You know, if you really give a damn about things, it's hard some days to just really not, for me anyway, to not just be like so freaking angry. And
I'll tell you something tore up. I'm completely intolerant of celebrities. And let me tell you why. Okay. Julia Roberts and George Clooney and Jessica Alba and
Swiftie.
And okay. So why do you only wait until the election cycle starts to want to come save us? Where were you when people were losing their homes? You were in your home with your millions and millions of dollars lobbying to be protected. Where were you when inflation happened and families were struggling to eat? Bet you weren't struggling to eat. But
see, this is the thing. They don't tolerate the immigrants.
Yeah.
They don't tolerate homeless people.
Yeah.
They don't tolerate a lot of the crap that they propose to espouse every day.
Yeah.
You know, they run them out.
Yeah.
This isn't an opinion. This is fact.
And I'm going to be very harsh.
I mean, come on.
Shut up. And here's why. You have no idea what the average American goes through. None at all. You are so epically disconnected from the realities of people that you should shut up, go back in your little expensive house, clam up, because nobody wants to hear from you. Especially when it comes to your political views, because it doesn't matter to the average American what you believe or what you think should happen. Because at the end of the day, I doubt you're going to come sit at my dinner table and share my meal with me. I doubt you're going to give me an opportunity to converse with you, because you are on high because you idolize yourself. And all you want is to keep what you have. Whether that means I starve or my kids starve, you don't care. Because if you cared, there's hundreds of thousands of people out there right now who don't have homes, and you could very easily help those people, but you choose not to.
Example, the hurricanes.
Mm-hmm.
Big example. They, like Harris, was in a chopper. Or Biden, I think. It was. I can't remember.
Who knows, man?
I can't remember which one, or both, or something. We're in a chopper. They had to shut down rescue operations for like 6 hours for a chopper to fly overhead and have this op so that they could survey the scene.
And also
and take pictures. Nothing. And they did nothing. There was supposed to be a plane full of something else. Well, it turned out that was just where they took pictures, and the plane never showed up.
Yeah.
You can go validate that. I'm not saying anything.
It's not a lie.
Nope.
It's the truth.
As usual,
people, all you got to do is go look.
This is the thing. Like FEMA there was a story and I haven't been able to, like, cause there's all these people that are coming out and on. So you don't, but here's what I'll say this. Like when you have like one person come out and say something, you can say like, man, they might
be a crackpot.
Whatever. When you have like dozens and dozens of people who have these stories of, you know, things like, you know, a guy lost his entire house, his possessions, everything. Mm-hmm. And FEMA wanted to give him like, it was like $2,500, right? Yeah. And it's written, it's supposed to be like 50 grand for the house and 50 grand for this FEMA is supposed to do, but they're out of money. So he only got that. That's not, he's not the only one saying that either. And I mean, this is the thing, like, this is how, what a tragedy we are in right now.
But this is what it goes back to, Reggie, the whole thing in Maui. Really? $700? We're sending billions to the Ukraine. Billions to the Ukraine. And all we could scatter up for American people who lost their homes, lost their livelihoods, lost family members was $700.
Okay. Now I did read some, somebody said, well, that was, there's a provision that that's the only the amount they can give in order before they have to go to congressional approval for this, this, this. But here's the thing that may be true. However, there's been many, you can't, it, there's provisions to allow emergency actions to take place. Yeah. I don't care who's in office. I don't care who's the majority leader here and who does this. Then all these freaking Congress people
need to get together.
They fly their ass back to DC and make an emergency legislation to allow for whatever spending that needs to happen to start supporting their relief efforts.
And here's the problem.
Period.
And here's the thing. Here's it's as blazingly color. It happened in Maui and what did all of the liberals say? Well, it's a one-time thing and we weren't prepared and we're trying the best we can and we're doing this. Okay. Well, it's happened again.
And you weren't prepared.
And you still weren't prepared and you've still done nothing and you've still helped no one. You're pathetic.
That's what I mean, dude. We have a non-functioning government.
Yeah. We don't have a government.
We have a non, yeah, exactly. It is not functioning.
Yeah.
When the private people are taking better care, which they should. And honestly, this is why I'm so anti like departments and like federal stuff, because you see like in the hurricane, guess who's actually doing stuff? The private citizens. Yeah. So give the private citizens their freaking tax dollars to do what they want to do. It is obvious there is enough people that want to help and will help. If they had the resources to do so, it would be even more. That's the thing. There's plenty of people who actually give a damn that will do something. The only reason why I couldn't ever go to North, and it still irks me today, is because of freaking my team and where it's at and my work. And I was going to, you know, and that we're such an, I can't even say because it's not public knowledge, but I'll just say there's things that I just couldn't get away from work. Still can't. So, I mean, I'm freaking in Indiana and I was willing to go all the way over to North Carolina, down to Florida, do all kinds of stuff.
Here's the problem.
Come on.
Here's the problem. We pay enough in taxes where we shouldn't have to.
Well, agreed, but that's what I'm saying. Enough, if that fails,
this Ponzi scheme that we call a government, and that's what it is. Oh, keep paying us taxes, and then we'll keep taking it and spending it on crap you don't really get a chance to vote on, and you don't get a chance to talk about. And then all of a sudden we're out of money, so we're going to need to raise your taxes because we need more money.
Look, this is one of those times when I would tell the American people that we need to stop being tolerant.
Yes.
Of this type of thing. We need to stop being tolerant of the taxation that we have. We need to start throwing tea back in that daggone harbor.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, this is insane. We're seeing how misappropriated our funds are. We're seeing how we're giving money to freaking terrorists.
Again, we this are is a $40 tolerance. Trillion in the hole. And 85% of that $40 trillion is owed to us.
Again, American people, this is the people's problem.
Yeah.
We are the ones who can say, we will not tolerate this anymore. We do that. And one of the only ways we have agency for that is our way we can vote.
Yep.
Again, I am adamantly vehemently against the Democratic Party. If anyone is a Democrat, you will not get my vote. Yeah. I do not care who is running against you.
And
I will vote for them.
Here's why I'm adamantly against the Democratic Party. Because it's no longer the Kennedy Democratic Party. It's this.
They don't make sense.
It's this set fire to it and watch it burn Democratic Party.
This is the same party who, when all Obama's office, let that BP oil spill just blow in the freaking Gulf.
Just marinate.
Just blow, right. Do that and just blah, blah, blah. It's the same party who for the last 3.5 years has allowed all this nonsense to happen across the globe because we have no testicles to go say anything because we have no president.
All right. Are you ready? For the last 32 years, out of the last 32 years, 24 of them, a Democrat has been in office. Okay.
Yeah.
President, right? 4 years of those, there was a Bush in office, but his vice president was Dick Cheney, who ran the country, not him. And we wound up in a forever war because Halliburton got contracts out of it.
How do you not look at Dick Cheney's endorsement of Kamala Harris and go and just throw a flag
here? But let me point out the one nice bright light in all this. Now, again, I'm not a Trump fan. The guy is just, his ego wears me out. But for 4 years, we had manufacturing in the United States. We were energy independent. We were moving in the right direction with the economy. My paycheck was bigger. I paid less taxes. Okay, so let's take the picture. For 28 of the last 32 years, we've had bad government, bad presidents that made bad decisions. But for the 4 years that we had not a great guy, but an actual businessman in office whose interest was our country, we flourished.
Yeah.
You can't, it's just the facts, guys. It's not a, I like Trump or I like Kamala. It's just the facts.
Yeah. And I'll just say that, like, I don't look at politics as the end all be all type of scenario where that this is going to fix everything, but you have a choice.
Yeah.
Like if you have a choice, you're going to make a choice. Then this is such a clear election. Like out of every election we've had, you could argue about like Romney and Obama and all that stuff. I did not like Mitt Romney, bro. I did. And I actually voted.
I was never, and I like him even less now after because I feel like when he lost the presidential bid and they didn't push him back out there for it again, he just turned bitter and joined the Democrats.
Yeah. I mean, it just, but again, so here's what tolerance plays a role in how we go about our daily lives and how we make decisions.
Yes.
You can tolerate people and things who do things that you don't agree with. Hell, my neighbors do stuff I tolerate.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean I don't even like not like them. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, this
means I disagree with them.
It just means there's stuff they do that I wouldn't do, but I tolerate it. It's not like I go over there and do something about it. Yeah. Now, if I saw one of my neighbors, like, I don't know, beating their kids or even like, you know, beating their dog.
Yeah.
My ass is rolling over there and they're not going to like the Reggie they meet at that point. I won't tolerate that. I'll do something about it. Right. But this nonsense of this whole like the tolerance of the left is a myth. It is such a bucket of what you would call hot
garbage.
Da-da.
Well, I haven't said that in a while.
I know. You're welcome. Appreciate so, but I mean, the thing is like, we as Christians have to have some level of tolerance, but we meet that tolerance with humility.
Yeah.
We can't look at certain things or people or whatever and see those as inferior or whatever. We must know that we are as corruptible as anybody else.
Yes.
Now, sure, some of us have done some better things than others or worse. Our classification of what's worse or whatever, but it's not like we're scot-free in this discussion about, you know,
yeah,
having that or whatever. So, well, Brian, I'm going to tolerate the ending of our episode.
Like, subscribe, clicky clicky.
Clicky clicky.
That's right. Clicky clicky.
Clicky clicky. There we go.
Maybe that's our new catchphrase.
No.
Clicky clicky.
No, that's not our new.
No. 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 Come on, man. No. Everybody's got a catchphrase.
Before we go, let me just say here's the last to wrap this up. Romans 14. Now accept the one who is weak in faith, but not for the purpose of passing judgment on opinions. One person has faith that he may eat all things, but he who is weak eats vegetables only. The one who eats must not view the one who does not eat with contempt, and the one who does not eat must not judge the one who eats, for God accepted him. Who are you to judge the servant of another? To his master he stands or falls, and he will stand, for the Lord is able to make him stand. Again, we are not the final decision about somebody's condemnation or not. That is not our place. But it is our place to proclaim the gospel to those around us and who we encounter every single day.
Commission.
Christians, and here's to the atheistic people. I don't know if anybody even watching this or not, but like, Christians are humans. We are as fallible. We make mistakes. Hell, you see all these news things from pastors who have affairs and all this kind of stuff all the time. We're human.
Yeah.
We are bound by our human condition.
We are born of sin.
Yes. The goal is to be more like Christ as much as we can, but we are never going to be Christ. We're never going to be perfect. We are never superior. That's not it at all. We lower ourselves so that he can be exalted. And I would just say that it's Christ who helps us be more like him every single day. Without that, I have no idea how I would be able to exist in the world we are right now.
Yep.
So just aware. For you Christians, you are the Jesus people will see. If you are out there being a complete and total schmuck, they're going to assume that's okay with Jesus.
So true.
You know, and that's what I'll leave it as, right?
Don't be a complete and total schmuck.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
Don't do it.
You could be one, but don't represent Christ like a schmuck. Yeah.
Don't be a schmuck.
Let me say this. We're all designed. We all speak a certain way. We all communicate a certain way, as you've already stated. We kind of all do these things different. My way of communicating the gospel may not be for everybody.
Yeah.
Your way, Brian, is not going to be for everybody.
No.
But that doesn't mean we don't try. And it, you know, and the more we try, the better we're going to be at it.
Yeah.
And so I guess say we tolerate other religious beliefs and don't force anyone to have ours. We just hope and pray that the truth will set them free.
Be open to hearing the opportunity.
Yeah.
A lot of us pass up opportunities and don't even know what pass them up.
We're R&B Talks.
I'm Brian.
I'm Reggie.
See ya.
Bye-bye.